Welcome to Gen Impact, a podcast of the Aptos Community Youth Program, where we provide entertaining and informative feedback for all audiences. I'm Elizabeth Evans, and today we are excited to sit down with Kalia Vaught, who works with an organization in Santa Cruz County called Ecology Action and is the Resilient Central Coast and Electric Vehicle Equity Fellow. She is a graduate of Cal State East Bay with a major in sociocultural anthropology with a minor in philosophy and emphasis on sustainability and social justice. Welcome to the show. We're so glad you could join us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited. I mean, this is one of my first podcasts, so I'm excited to talk about me and all of the cool things that I do.
Yeah, great. We're so happy. All right. So, Kalia, would you be able to tell us more about your background and your interests?
Yeah, so I majored in sociocultural anthropology, and it took a while for me to decide my major. I was between environmental sciences and all of that, but I took an anthro class, and I really just enjoyed the content that you go over because you really connect culture to society and then your bigger worldview and why things are the way that they are right now. So it's really cool to be able to really understand, you know, the past and the present and how it connects and how culture has evolved and how it affects how we view our environment and how we connect to our environment as well. And so I really wanted to have an emphasis on sustainability to really go through those courses with, you know, sustainability in mind and how do we become better through what we've learned from the past and et cetera.
Yeah, that sounds super cool. I like the idea of doing anthropology with climate research and sustainability. It's a good mix of people versus earth, and I like that. How did you first realize that you were interested in technology and the environment?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in the technology age. You know, I had iPhones, iPads, all of that. And I mean, you could see it for bad, you know, if you get stuck. But I always saw the potential of being able to connect to so many different areas versus when we were so localized and didn't have that connection. And how can we kind of make that better and mainstream things that are important and things that could really bring us into the future in terms of sustainability. So honestly, technology has always been in the forefront of my mind in terms of whenever I was studying, I was like, okay, how can we turn this into something global and how can we connect other people to other resources? And that's majorly what I do with Resilient Central Coast is connecting, you know, local people with local climate action they can do. That's really simple because of course you need the policy and you need people enforcing other things, but it's also super important to understand the sustainable choice because it hasn't been mainstreamed in such a long time.
Okay, yeah, that kind of makes me want to ask more about how you reach out to different people and the media connectivity that you were talking about. So how do you do that? How do you reach out to other people about this?
That's really interesting. I mean, a lot of it is we have an in-house marketing team, so being able to really paint a picture, paint a story using visuals and using people's actual day-to-day lives, like being able to connect not just them with local climate action, but also the people that are actually taking climate action. So you record a video and you can really see a day in someone's life where they're trying to make these tough decisions and tough choices for the climate and putting yourself in their shoes and being able to envision, like, I can do that as well. It's a mixture between marketing and being able to understand what the community needs, especially the local community as well.
That sounds really cool with the reaching out part. I didn't know that there was a different marketing side to that. So what is a project initiative that you've been working on recently?
Recently, the schools are closed now, but we were really focusing on trying to understand the anxiety, the climate anxieties within students, because a lot of them aren't really heard. They're not really told the true story because whether to shelter them or to, you know, not give them anxiety, but at the same time it gives them that unknown aspect of climate where the best way to combat anxiety is to be aware of what am I having anxiety about and what are people doing about it. And if you don't have those conversations with kids, then they just kind of grow up into this unknown and then continuously have bad thoughts about it. So being able to be aware of what's going on and what people are doing and what you can do within your own life is something that really helped my anxiety, but also just trying to spread that to high school and middle schools throughout the county.
Yeah, that's really cool. I feel like most of the anxiety that a lot of kids have is because of the unknown and because people don't really know what's happening. So they're just confused over what we should be anxious about and how to fix things, which kind of leads me to my next question, which is what do you think is the most pressing environmental concerns you think that the youth of this community in specific should focus on helping with?
That's a good question. I mean, it's such a complex problem. We're such a vulnerable area, especially the Central Coast in general. It can just any type of change, whether that's 1 degree Celsius higher, and it really impacts the ecosystem around us. So we're such a vulnerable area that I think pollution, carbon pollution, because that then kind of wraps us in a heat blanket and then raises our temperature, which is also raising the water's temperature. And if the oceans raise, then it affects the whole ecosystem within. We're an ocean-based community. community. So affects like the reefs and everything like that. And also just changes the wave patterns, making us have less land basically, because it'll continue to rise because the ice caps would be melting. So it's, I think that's the biggest, one of the biggest ones is definitely just carbon pollution and understanding the multifaceted of it, like cars, everyday cars, and being able to understand, is it really worth it to drive, you know, 15 minutes to the store versus, you know, bike 20 minutes or something like that, like on an e-bike. So really understanding how to make an impact locally, but also policy-wise as well. So carbon pollution is my number one for sure. And I've saved a lot of greenhouse gas with this job. And I've just been really enjoying that you're able to see the impact through technology and being able to make charts and do all this GIS mapping to understand how you're actually impacting the environment and make models to be able to understand how the future would be impacted as well.
Yeah, I like the idea of doing the GIS modeling and seeing the like different disparities. For example, in my environmental studies class, we did stuff with like heat disparity and like urban heat, which is pretty prevalent everywhere, but here it also especially it is. So we focused on that a little bit. How does working with EVs shape how you see like fossil fuel use? So like with today's like very resource dependent instead of like renewable energy dependent, do you think we could eventually shift over completely to reusable energy?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely done the research, and I work extensively with EVs and renewable energy. And the good thing is that the United States is just like a resource rich state for like renewable energy. Like we have a lot of solar, we have a lot of wind, we have a lot of different aspects of it. There's also like geothermal, like the more technical things, but solar and wind are the main ones. And we definitely are resource rich in that aspect. And it's just about really the funding and people caring about like moving into that, because it is a money game at the end of the game. So like fossil fuels and all of that is a really big money industry. I mean, it's made a lot of it from like petrochemicals and stuff like that. So that's always been around. And it's just been the default setting for us, like gas, like it's so easy. It's the longevity of it all. And I think we don't look at the future and think about how much we've kind of continued to evolve EVs. Like EVs were around back in like the 70s, back before then. They were actually predate gasoline cars, but they decided to not go with mainstream them because basically gas had just more longevity and like the recharge times were really slow back then. Like they had their first EV charger and it looked all wonky. And then we kind of just ran with making gas stations everywhere. So we just mainstreamed the wrong thing. Because we didn't have an understanding of the environment or what the big, you know, gas that was coming out of the cars were doing to the environment. But now that we do, and now that we have an understanding, I think I'm pretty optimistic that we'll continue to make the right choice and shift to renewable energy. I mean, this year we got to 20%, 21% in our renewable energy portfolio just for California in general, which is really good, versus like gas, which is at around like 37%. So we're making strides, and it's super cool to see like use technology and be able to understand how we can forecast that and how we can be like, we're trying to reach, you know, 100% renewable energy by 2035 or something like that, and how each year we have to make progress. So it's really cool to see like the different aspects of it.
And your program specifically works with like grants for EVs, I think I read.
Yeah. So ours, we're not a grant program. Like we don't have the funding for it, but we basically just help people apply for them. And we focus in like low income and disadvantaged communities because they are the ones that are getting impacted the most by carbon or, you know, fossil fuels. Like they decide to put those factories in those communities because it's cheaper and no one's going to really think about it or bat an eye. So we look to really install chargers at, you know, multifamily houses or apartments for little or no cost, depending where you are. And then from there, we kind of go and canvas and knock on doors, which is the hard part. And you know, they're like, what are you doing here? So being able to kind of go and just explain like, hey, we got these chargers in and they're going to be really more affordable than gas. Would you be interested in making that sustainable choice and going electric? And with our resources, we basically help them apply for the grants because they're really policy heavy and like jargon heavy. So being able to really sit down with someone and them not get, you know, overwhelmed with all the things that they have to do, because it is essentially free money and you have to really know how to apply for it. And you have to really dot your I's and cross your T's and make sure that it's all in check if you want to get the money. But at the end of the day, it's super useful, and we've helped a lot of people get into electric vehicles that didn't think it was a possibility for them, and now they are driving living cleaner and breathing clean air.
So with these initiatives and like the grants, do you ever have to work with the city or the county or even state governments to get some of these programs out?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of like calling different like grant agencies and connecting my, you know, participant with them. But yeah, I work with the city. I work because there's like local grants and then there's federal grants. So there's like the federal tax credit going on for EVs. And that's pretty straightforward. Like you go to a dealership and they'll do it at the time of purchase most often. But then there's, you know, the actual grants where they have a opening deadline, they have an application, and then you have to apply, you have to wait to get approved. So it's a really lengthy process. And so just making sure that I'm the advocate for that participant and getting through the process is probably the main part of the job, honestly. So definitely connecting with so many different local people and also like federal government people as well.
So with working at a nonprofit with like these community-based like solutions to climate problems locally, what other stuff besides EVs have you guys kind of looked into transforming in the next few years?
That's a good question. Ecology Action has so many different faucets to it. So that's like one aspect of it. But we also work on like supermarket refrigeration. And we're actually trying to make that more effective and save energy. So that's really cool, honestly, because we've been looking for like, you know, engineers to come with some new ideas on refrigeration. I mean, you might have seen like in supermarkets now, like the lights will turn off. That was like partly us and partly some other people's ideas working together, and just like how to make energy, you know, more efficient and go the long run at supermarkets, because they're everywhere. And so they're really mainstream and they use a lot of energy and resources, and like refrigeration coolant is like super bad for the environment. So being able to like navigate new ways of thinking about how we refrigerate our ingredients is one aspect. And then we do like charging, and then we work on like native plant gardening, mostly in like Monterey area. We basically go and plant native plants that are less water intensive and are less invasive, and therefore we save on like water and stuff like that. So there's a bunch of programs, and like some have like come in and come out from like water like cleaning and stuff like that. So it's been really a cool organization to work with and see all the different faucets of environment and how climate impacts it.
I never even thought about refrigeration cooling. Yeah. That's so specific and unique. Do you guys come up with all of your ideas specifically, or do you get ideas from like community members?
So partly it's based off of like the community need. So we go and we look, well, partly it's grant funding. So being able to be like, what are the grants and what can we apply for to get funding to do this work? But the other part is like, what's the biggest kind of stressors on greenhouse gases or any impact, climate impact? And we noticed that one of them was energy, and being able to transition into renewable energy means that we might need to navigate how we're pulling energy from the grid. And so that was like a big aspect of it, is like, oh my God, supermarkets are really straining the energy grid. And because, you know, we're using fossil fuels, we don't really think about it as much when we probably should. And so that kind of came into our mind, and we're like, okay, well, if we can work to really understand what are the complex things within supermarkets, whether that's like all the refrigerators being plugged in and like draining so much energy and like the lights are always super bright and stuff like that. So really just thinking outside of the box and thinking about things that are really big, but also really like detail oriented, like things that you can minimize by steps, basically.
Yeah, the smaller steps, like taking care of your food properly and like not wasting things. I think that's something that people don't really think about as often. Okay, so with the Anthropology Foundation that you have, you went into native land practices and like that kind of ecology. So I'm very interested in that subject myself. I want to go into that in my future and do stuff with like native land, and I'm doing pre-law, so I want to do something with fighting battle for native lands is kind of what I'm interested in doing, and going into like the ecology side of it. What is your background on that, or any interesting things?
Oh my gosh, yeah, I took like a lot of like fire ecology classes. I worked really closely with the indigenous tribe Muwek Maolone, which is basically where my campus was. That's like their land, and so we work really with them a lot. And they did a lot of like land and fire practices when they had like owned the land, because it is like where my school was. It's just this massive hill, and so when it's like, you know, summertime and it's all like dead, You want to make sure that there's not like a lot of high brush, because then that can catch fire and stuff like that. So they taught us a lot about how to keep like our campus really like within the indigenous tribe of like keeping fire ecology and using, you know, low flame fires to really ward off actually big wildfires, basically. So I took a whole fire ecology class, and I worked directly with the Mo'okma Ohlone tribe, as well as the Yukuts, which are kind of higher, more towards like the Nevadas. And they also showed us a lot about their fire practices as well. So there's a lot of courses that you could like take to really learn native land. And I also worked on planting native land species on our campus, actually, because we had a lot of ones that were invasive that were just there to look pretty, but they didn't actually serve a purpose. And so we actually started working with them to plant some native plants on there. And if you ever go to Cal State East Bay, they have like plaques where you can see what the plants are and stuff like that. And I worked with them on that. My professor that I had at Cal State East Bay, like, specifically kind of went into fire ecology and stuff like that. So it was really cool to see like the underworkings of like, how do you understand indigenous like connection to the environment, whereas we are very like parcel, and we're very much like, oh, we own this land and we see it as like a potential like building a mega like, you know, hotel or something like that, versus like seeing the land for what it is and making it beautiful in its own like aura. So that was really cool, and that's like why I majored in anthropology, is because you look at things more holistic versus like the money side of it, or like being able to see the potential versus like what it actually is. And so it's really cool to see the indigenous connection to the environment versus like we come from a very like, I own this land and this is mine and I can put all of these things on it and make it beautiful, where you can really make the land beautiful by actually caring for it through these land-based practices. So it was really cool to work with. And I definitely recommend, you know, exploring that, because it gives you such a new perspective on life as well.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting with working with like a mutualistic relationship instead of a, I own this and I'm taking this over. And it's a very scary relationship that I think we have right now with the and like environment and the earth itself. And I think Native Americans and Indigenous people like all over the world have shaped the environment so well that we need to learn from like the way that they take care of the earth and the way that they give back and take, and that like very symbolic relationship, instead of just completely owning everything we think we deserve to have. Yeah, I got to work in Alaska with the Tlingit people, and seeing that kind of relationship where they treat everything as if it is holy and as if it is the best thing is just very powerful. It's like, why would you ever, you know, not have a symbolic relationship with the earth when it means so much to you? So I think we can definitely learn from that.
Absolutely. And to piggyback off of that, like a lot of it was like, we turned it into a really legal battle between the indigenous. Like what I learned from like my fire ecology classes was that they basically outlawed the indigenous way of, you know, caring for the land via like, you know, fire ecology, where you're burning off the small low brush using like low fire to basically save the environment when it's hot and so you won't catch a wildfire. And they basically banned that for like years and years and years. And then we had like the worst fires ever. And like the fire departments were all like, what's going on? Like, how do we care for this? And then they finally, only like recently, like within, you know, the last 10 years, I would say, started working with the indigenous and learning about these kind of prescribed burns, is what they're called. And so they've actually been using that for the past, you know, couple of years, and seen a lot of tremendous growth, as well as just it stimulates the plants and all of them around, because there's some plants that really thrive through fire. And so being able to do these prescribed burns and kind of stimulate those to be able to, in the fall, grow and become so beautiful was part of why back in the day when the indigenous had the land, it was such a beautiful, you know, mosaic landscape of different kind of environments and native species and stuff like that. So I just want to piggyback that a lot of it is legal, and partly why I'm also looking into law as well, environmental law. So that's really cool that you are as well.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want to do. It's crazy that it's taken them so long to realize that. But also, I think a lot more people need to realize that, especially with, I think they're doing things with national parks now and giving part of national parks back to them to be able to take care of the environment and to be able to have that relationship again, which was what I think is incredibly important. We think it's the right thing to do, but also we haven't been on this land for as long as Indigenous people have, and I feel like it's important to listen to people that know the land the best. So yeah, that's definitely a very important thing. So right now you're doing the Sustainability Service Corp 11-month fellowship. When that ends, what are you looking to do in your future next?
Yeah, I mean, I have some prospective things lined up. I mean, Ecology Action has obviously offered me a job, and I've been thinking about it. But I also really want to, you know, beef up my resume for law school. So I was thinking about moving into policy. That's something I did in my undergraduate a lot via my philosophy classes and professors. So I was thinking about working at the food bank that basically does a lot of policy on food sovereignty and why they need the food bank and why it's so impactful, which is also something I care about deeply. So it would be really cool to kind of get my foot in the door in policy and then, you know, eventually go to law school. But I also really love what I'm doing at Ecology Action, like, you know, just like seeing the impact, like actually using technology to be able to understand the impact I'm making, how much carbon I'm saving, like how much water I've saved people, how much money I've saved people. So it's also been so cool to see. So I might stick around for another year, just closing some close-ins and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I have a lot of ideas, but I definitely do want to move into policy. I mean, I work extensively with basically the environmental lobbying, and they're called like the climate something lobby, and it's really cool. I just like go to their meetings and just take notes on like, oh, like this is like lobbying for good, because like all I hear is like lobbying for like oil companies. So like this is really interesting to see. So yeah, I have a lot of my hands in a lot of different things, but I'm moving towards policy for sure.
Would you go with the philosophy route at all? More into that?
Honestly, philosophy was just like something that I could just turn to and have fun and just like learn more about thought and like how we got to our thoughts now, which is crazy. Yeah, no, I do want to like explore more philosophy, and it'll always be something that I always like take classes on and stuff like that. I feel like I'm like a perpetual learner. Like I will just always be taking classes and different things and learning. So definitely something I'll take with me to law school as well.
And also with the anthropology, with the political ecology, I feel like that's something you might end up routing into, which is really interesting. I've never actually heard that phrase before, political ecology.
Oh my gosh, it was one of my favorite classes, like, ever. It was, like, you would just basically learn a bunch of things, like, in different areas, right? So I could be talking about, like, soybean farmers in South America, and then I could also be talking about how it connects to how we farm in America. So it's really just understanding the connection between the environment and people is pretty much what political ecology is, and how it became so political, and how it was like people do need to advocate for these things, because you can't just, you know, use all of these pesticides on our food and not think there's going to be any repercussions. So like political ecology was super cool to understand what's going on, not in our world, but also what connects to our world and how everything's kind of interconnected within our environment. We end up eating the food from our environment, and then we end up being like sick, and that's like public health. So it's like all super cool to see the different approaches, but political ecology focused really on how our relationship is with the environment and how it's impacted socially and culturally as well, because in South America they prefer not to use a lot of pesticides, but because they were shipping it out to us and it was like there was some kind of problems with like bugs and stuff like that, they're like, maybe just use this one, kills all everything, literally kills everything on the ground, like maybe that'll work. So it's really cool to see how like our culture is like, we just want to get the most amount of, you know, how we can get all of the soybeans, like we want to get the most amount of soybeans with the least amount of cost, basically. And how do we deal about that, because like it was costing us a lot to like lose, you know, some type of land due to like those bugs or something like that. So it was just really, it was a really cool class, and you really get kind of, you get into like law, and you get into like understanding how we even got to like, oh, we do need to protect the environment, and how do we do that using our legal battles that we currently have and stuff like that.
That's interesting. When I thought of like political ecology, it's probably sad because my generation, I immediately thought of like presidents. and so I was very interested in what that actually meant, not just the way that I was thinking about it. But the way that like you represented that was super, super cool. I didn't ever think about the way that we like build on certain things, and it's all across the world. It's not even just in one specific location. Like everywhere is shipping and everywhere is like traveling. So it's very interconnected. So I can expect that one thing would lead to another. Okay, so as a recent high school graduate, Abdullah, I would love to ask you about some opportunities and resources you think would be best for students.
Definitely. So, of course, we have our climate action platform, but it Resilient Central Coast, but it might not be where you guys are at in terms of, like, you're just high school graduates and you want to know kind of what you can do. A lot of it is using your voice and understanding that your voice is so important and influential in this community, and being able to, you know, meet with like-minded people is probably the biggest idea. So there's like earthday.org, which basically has a lot of resources. Like if you go to college, like, and you don't agree with something in your college, they have a lot of like pamphlets and things like that to really get them to be making the sustainable choice and really thinking about your future as long as, you know, their future as well. So that's also super useful. And then honestly, just getting connected with like-minded people, like, and just understanding the complexity of the problem that we're facing. Like, there's a lot of different things within the environment that you can be focusing on. So maybe if you want like a specific focus or an emphasis, like, definitely explore that. Like if you're more in you know, invested in like plant life and native species, maybe you can explore, you know, ecology and something like native plant life and indigenous species as well. Or, you know, maybe you're more into like water safety and stuff like that, and really keeping our water and ocean, you know, clean and keeping our reefs safe. You can explore ocean.org, which is another really cool resource where they have, you know, just informational videos, but also things that you can do, like, to kind of advocate for your environment and reach out to local, you know, congress people and stuff like that, and let them know, like, you're watching and that, you know, it does, your voice does matter. So there's a lot of different resources that you can explore. It's really just what you're passionate about. Like, if you really are passionate about anything within this environment, you definitely want to explore deeply into that as well. So it really just matters about what you're interested in.
All right. And is there anything else you would love to share with us today?
Even if I know that we're so connected and that we see things on social media and it like desensitizes us to like, oh my gosh, like, this is happening, and it gives you so much anxiety. But at the same time, you should understand that there are people that are fighting for you in your future as well. And it's not just there's bad people out there and they're in high places. There's a lot of people fighting for the earth and fighting for you guys' future on here as well. So just keep that in mind and try not to get too anxious.
Yeah, that's really helpful. All right. Thank you so much for this conversation today. And thank you so much for our listeners. Please stay tuned for more Gen Impact episodes to come.